Good afternoon, everyone. The meeting will come to order. Clerk will note the roll. There is a quorum. We have the minutes of April 19th before us. Any corrections, additions, changes to the minutes? Representative Carlson moves approval of the minutes. Seeing no further discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Members, in terms of our schedule today, we're going to be doing first the agriculture bill, which after hearing it and amending it will temporarily lay over. Then we're going to do the same with the environment bill. Then we're going to recess for caucus. Then I, as chair, will make a gentle reminder of St. Cloud Days from 5 to 7 o'clock tonight at the Doubletree Hotel. And then we'll be back here at 7:30 to do the jobs bill, which we will then roll in agriculture and environment into, subject, of course, to the will of the committee. Any questions on that schedule? See no questions. Representative Hamilton moves that House File 3888 be referred to the General Register. And Representative Hamilton, I see one amendment. Do you want to take that amendment now?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move the A16 amendment. And this is a technical amendment, and I was wondering if Mr. Sullivan would like to just walk us through this amendment quick.
Mr. Sullivan, can you walk us through the A16-1086 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, this amendment was put together by the reviser of statutes. The reviser worked with the department on the language currently in the bill, changing the statutes for the Ag BMP loan program. And the reviser's office noticed that there were some issues with the language as drafted. And so the reviser worked with the department and with me to come up with the language in the amendment before you today that would fix some errors in the bill.
All right, any discussion to the A16-1086 amendment? Seeing no discussion, all in favor of the A16-1086 amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Hamilton, can you present your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll walk through the bill here briefly. Section 1 provides boilerplate language. Section 2, what we're actually doing is, Mr. Chairman and committee, last year we all pulled together to focus a lot of resources towards the avian influenza outbreak. What we did in the interim is we asked the Department of Agriculture, the Board of Animal Health, the University of Minnesota to come back and visit with us on what it would take to make sure that we as a state are prepared for any other emerging diseases to replicate and duplicate what we did for the avian influenza outbreak. So far this year we have not had any new cases of avian influenza, and so what we're doing is we're giving the Department of Agriculture and the Board of Animal Health and subsequently the University of Minnesota a little more leeway instead of strictly avian influenza to open that up to make sure that we are protected from other emerging diseases. So Section 2, you have investments at the University of Minnesota for the veterinarian, the VDL, veterinarian diagnostic lab. Subdivision 3 is a farm safety. This is on page 2. This is an initiative by Chair Paul Anderson to focus our efforts on farm safety. Subdivision 4, the agriculture laboratory and emergency response. This is new equipment in the Department of Agriculture's lab facility. Section 3 on lines 3.4, this is an emergency account appropriation. And so what we're doing is we're reallocating those dollars so that the department, like I said earlier, can have a little more flexibility as it training individuals and purchasing equipment, again, very focused on emerging diseases. Section 4, this is the goes along with that amendment we just passed, and this would allow the BMP loan funding be used to fix wells, any wells that may be contaminated. Section 6 there, those are technical changes that came from the reviser's office. Going to page 7, section 8, the incentive or the research dollars that we had, we felt that there was a conflict of interest because the University of Minnesota was receiving those dollars, and we had the dean of the university on that advisory board. And so the language changed would have the college, a representative from the college, in conjunction with the Commissioner of Department of Agriculture, to work very closely with this board as directed. Section 9 there, we added biobutanol, the definition of biobutanol, to that incentive program. The next sections through section 21, these are language changes. Instead of a annual payment, we're switching that to a quarterly payment. And then section, it'd be on page 22 then, it skipped to page 22. We wanted to make sure that we'd also allow the Board of Animal Health to have similar flexibility with those avian influenza dollars that we did with the Department of Agriculture. So, Mr. Chairman, that is the bill, and I'd stand for questions.
I wonder, Chair Hamilton, if we, I know the spreadsheet isn't real long on this, but I don't know if Mr. Savory perhaps wants to just briefly go through it.
Sure.
Mr. Savory, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll walk through the spreadsheet briefly. As you mentioned, it is rather short, but I'll go by line item and just describe the spreadsheet. Line 8 is the Veterinary Diagnostic Laboratory Software for the VDL at the University of Minnesota. It is a one-time appropriation of $1.8 million. Line 9 is the Veterinary Lab Equipment for the VDL as well. That's $283,000, a one-time appropriation. Line 13 is the ROPS, or the Tractor Rollover Protection Pilot Program, which is $250,000 in fiscal 17, a one-time appropriation. Line 17 is additional laboratory equipment for MDA. It's a $2.218 million, a one-time appropriation. And then below that, line 18 is the transfer to the Ag Emergency Account, which is $3.332 million, a one-time transfer. Total new initiatives within the bill are $7,883,000 in fiscal 17. And subsequently, there is a reduction on line 23 to the avian influenza dollars, which I believe is page 22 in the bill, line 22.9, simply adjusts the avian influenza response activities in the prior bill from last year. And then additionally, if you go down to line 25, you'll see two revenue adjustments within the bill. Line 26 and line 27 represent a transfer of $6.713 million to the general fund from the ag fund used for our RFA loan program. And that concludes the spreadsheet.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Savory. Questions for Representative Hamilton? Representative Carlson.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to track the transfer there from the avian flu account to the emergency account. And the question I have is, how much then after the transfer is in the emergency account, and what's been the history of the drawdown to make sure that there's enough in that account after the transfer?
Chair Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Carlson. There were the drawdown from the RFA account. We had allocated $10 million for that RFA account, and this is a separate RFA account specifically for avian influenza for producers that could access low-interest loans to upgrade their facilities for biosecurity purposes and otherwise. Out of that $10 million, only about $1.5 million were used over the course of the year. And so we still have over $2 million in that account, specifically in case producers want to access those monies. And the additional dollars were transferred over either for purchasing equipment or that software, and in addition to that, $1.9 million was transferred back into the general fund. And subsequently, we're going to have in Representative Cornish's bill to where if there's a disastrous outbreak again, that they would have access to that emergency disaster account also. So they'd still be very well protected.
Other questions? Representative Carlson?
That's what I wanted to get a little history there.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hamilton, I have a question about the lab equipment. First of all, I might have missed it in the beginning of your presentation, but you have the veterinary lab equipment and then another line of laboratory equipment, and I think I heard that the first one is at the U, maybe, and the second one is at the Department of Ag?
Yes.
Chair Hamilton.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Liebling, thank you for that. You're absolutely correct. The first part is for the veterinarian diagnostic lab, and we had wonderful testimony from Dr. Trevor Ames, Dean of the Veterinarian School, to come in and speak to that. And then also the Department of Agriculture, they have a lab as well that focuses on different things than what the university VDL focuses on. And so they need some lab equipment upgrades as well. Thank you.
So, Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so, Representative Hamilton, I'm not sure if you will know the answer to this, but there was also a request this year, if I recall right, from the Department of Health for laboratory equipment. They need significant amount of money to upgrade their laboratory equipment that helps diagnose human epidemics. And I know that the two departments share a building, or they're close to each other anyway. And so I'm just wondering if any of this is equipment that is going to be shared. Because I don't think that in the Health and Human Services bill, I don't think there's anything for the Department of Health's equipment. And it does seem rather, I don't know, ironic, I guess, to have all this money for laboratory equipment for ag, which I'm sure is needed. I mean, I think it's very important that we make sure that our labs have up-to-date equipment. But our Department of Health is a nation-leading department in diagnosing outbreaks, sometimes actually connected to agricultural products. You know, if there's some kind of contamination, they are extremely adept at identifying it and tracking it to its source. And so do you know if any of this is shared or can be shared, or, you know, maybe some of the equipment is the same equipment?
Chair Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Liebling, this equipment is specifically, and I know we have someone from the department here as well that could speak to it, but this is specifically ag-related, right, and to protect the food supply all across the state of Minnesota. I would rather have, I guess, the Chair of Health and Human Services speak to the Health and Human Services needs. But again, this is dealing with things that are agriculture-related and subsequently for food safety.
So. Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess this is somewhat of the consequence that we have, you know, that we're sort of siloed in the way we do things in the legislature. But, what you're talking about, food outbreaks and stuff, and I thought that was kind of also under the purview of the Department of Health, you know, when there was, I don't know, sometime in the past, we've had some pretty serious foodborne illnesses across the state. And I just, you know, I don't know if somebody here can answer. Maybe Representative Dean knows more about that. But I'm asking there was a request from the Department of Health for laboratory equipment, too, and there's a substantial line item here for the Department of Ag to get new equipment for their lab. And I'm just wondering if there's any crossover and any sharing of equipment, because I think they may be doing some of the same work, but I just don't know enough about that.
Well, I guess I can, if Representative Dean wants to yield, and I should have asked you if you wanted to yield when you were asked the question last night, but assuming you do, Representative Dean, please go forward. And then, I don't know, maybe the answer is to bring someone from the department down as well. Representative Dean.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and members, there is a kind of a demarcation zone, and sometimes it's in delis and sometimes it's in grocery stores or where it's ag on one side and health on the other side. And I don't know exactly where that line is, and maybe someone from the department would come down. But there is two sides of it, and they both do stuff.
All right. Sir, I see someone at the witness stand. Can you state your name for the record and give us your testimony?
Mr. Chair, I'm Matt Woolman. I'm Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. While our labs are co-located together, the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Health Lab are independent labs within our building. We do have a lot of crossover in terms of our work together. So, for example, on food safety, the Department of Health has a lot of work that goes on working with doctors to understand clinical clusters or problems, and then the Department of Agriculture will trace back and figure out where those food safety problems are. So there's a lot of shared work that goes on, but the equipment is not shared.
Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to follow up on that, is there duplication of equipment? Is the same equipment have to be bought sometimes by the Department of Health and the Department of Ag in order for them each to carry out their separate functions with that equipment?
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, there's not duplication of work that's going on. They have their equipment for their specific program needs, and our equipment at the Department of Agriculture is for our specific program needs. There might be similar types of equipment that are used, but there's not the ability. Once you establish, our laboratory director always talks to me about when you establish a protocol for a piece of equipment, it's very difficult and time-consuming and costly to change that process around for another type of sampling process. And we could certainly have him come and talk further if at some other point if needed. But there's not duplication of work that's happening, if that's your question.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hamilton. Thank you. You know, I grew up on a dairy farm, and I've been paying attention to what's going on in your committee, and even though I don't serve on it, but I'm assuming this bill coming out of your committee was very, very bipartisan, and I like what you're doing in terms of, you know, an outsider might think that you're cutting agriculture, but you're not. You're just putting money away or being proactive with the money. So thank you for what you're doing. Now, if you want to comment on how it came out of your committee or not. But thank you.
Chair Hamilton.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you know, it's an honor to serve the Agriculture Committee. And we've said all along, I see Chair Poppy is here as well, you know, agriculture is, and Chair Wagenius, agriculture is bipartisan, if not nonpartisan. And so, like I said, it's an honor to be able to chair the committee. And, you know, we'd come together and we worked with the Department of Agriculture and the Board of Animal Health to make sure that the effort is still on avian influenza, the focus, but we also want to be proactive because there's other diseases out there too. We want to be proactive to make sure that we're doing what's right for the producers, livestock, crops, and the flocks all across the state. So thank you.
Other discussion? Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize for being late, and I don't know if anyone's brought this up, but you know, again, there's no problem with this bill for me is that there's absolutely no more help for the emerald ash borer, and it's in the station of the city and the other areas of the state, and it will be a it will be devastating. I've seen evidence, but unmarked, by the city, of trees in the golf course by me, and I know I think there's something like 3,000 ash trees in Phelan Regional Golf Course, and I know that's near and dear to some people's hearts on this particular committee, and it will soon be pretty much a cow pasture if we're not careful and if we don't start addressing this, which will might help golf scores, but but it's not going to help the state, and I'm a little sad that that's the way we're going to do it when we have a, you know, a substantial budget surplus and we're not willing to invest in the quality of life pieces. I remember a couple years ago when the whole farm community was screaming about an urban legislator running the committee and never going to get anything addressed. We haven't said anything about a greater Minnesota person running the committee and our needs not getting addressed. So just a comment.
Chair Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Mahoney. When this was brought up, I do have a printout, and I apologize, didn't bring it with me, but the Department of Agriculture, we have one of the best. There's no question about it. And that printout said that they do have the resources to meet their obligations as it pertains to Emerald Ash Borer as well. I take this very seriously to represent all across the state, and I'm proud that I've been working very closely with Representative Clark and others who are metro legislators on urban ag initiatives and other things, because again, agriculture affects everybody all across the state in a positive way.
Okay. See how things evolve. Other discussion to the bill?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, you were talking about urban agriculture. Did that make it in the bill?
Chair Hamilton.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative, there is language in the bill, absolutely, for urban agriculture. In fact, last year, we actually are the first state, I believe, in the nation to add a definition of urban agriculture. And myself and Representative Karen Clark, we met with the Lieutenant Governor last Friday. And I've met with our leadership also. There's a lot of talk around racial disparities and investing money in racial disparities. And it was very interesting, if not fascinating, to hear the testimony of the people that came in and talked about the urban agriculture initiatives. It's more than just growing a carrot. I mean, it's growing communities. It's addressing racial disparities, educating our children. It's more than just growing a carrot. It's something that I'm very passionate about. And we do have language in there. I'm looking for any additional dollars through the racial disparity piece to address that so that we can continue furthering that urban agriculture initiative. So, yes, we do have language in the bill.
Other discussion? Representative Kahn.
I'm sorry I was called out for something, but there was another issue that had come up. It was a bill by Representative Teese, which I think we almost unanimously passed in whatever, which had to do with the Somali group Kajug and their connection with 4-H and to try and get 4-H. And, you know, what's the chance of trying to do something with that?
Yeah. Chair Hamilton.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Kahn. So those issues as well, whether it's the good food access, the bill that you're talking about and the bill that myself and Representative Hillstrom were just discussing, these would be perfect examples on how those racial disparity dollars could be used or should be used. So that that would be something that we would support also.
Mr. Chair?
To that point, Representative Hillstrom?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what is the racial disparities target that this committee has been given to take care of these really great programs that you support?
Chair Hamilton.
Chairman, we do not have a racial disparity target.
Representative Hillstrom, we haven't set racial disparity targets for any of the committees.
Well,
I mean, we don't normally set a specific target for a subset of issues such as that.
Well,
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Hamilton was just talking about how he believed that that would be a really great place to target the racial disparities money, and if the House doesn't have any, then it has to be in his bill. And he has really great language, and he talks about how he really supports these initiatives, but he doesn't fund them, and there doesn't appear to be a path to fund them, Mr. Chair. And so while I'm going to support your bill because you do have some good stuff in your bill, I just think that you can't say that you're talking about all these really great things that you're doing and that there should be money to fund them and then have no ability to fund them.
Representative Wilgenius.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to follow up on Representative Hillstrom's earlier question because it sounded to me like there was no money, and I think she's now established that there is no money for urban agriculture.
Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair, remember, this is a whole new line of thinking. I've never heard of that before, that you have to have money for everything you talk about. Otherwise, we'd have to have $1 billion in public safety. We run 100 bills through there with all sorts of ideas to fund things that we'd love to, but to do would break the bank for 6 years in a row. It's wishful thinking.
Chair Hamilton, Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Cornish. Would that wishful thinking be the Senate and the governor?
No, I don't.
Representative Cornish?
I don't put any hope in the other side. I just concentrate on our own side.
Okay. Representative Kahn.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and Representative Hamilton, this is something that I think of every year when I see all the kids in the blue jackets roaming around the Capitol. There are certain states, like I believe Iowa, that have FFA chapters in every single school district in the state. FFA here avoids the urban schools, do not have, maybe has them in one or something like that. Is that something you could kind of work on? Because that's this. I know 4-H is kind of, and they say, well, we have 4-H. And I know 4-H is kind of a neat thing, but the FFA, which of course I've never had any connection with, is, you know, kind of a much more exciting thing for the kids. And if other states can have them at every school in the country, why can't we? And I'm not asking you to do it in this bill. I'm just do it at some point.
Chair Hamilton.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, I agree. And with the exception of we've had some wonderful students right here, whether it's Humboldt High School or Highland Park right in St. Paul, that have terrific FFA chapters. And when we had individuals coming in and testifying on the urban ag piece, one of the things that I've requested too is let's establish these 4-H and FFA programs too. But I tell you, we really had some stellar students all across the metro area coming in and testifying on that bill and others, and who are involved in FFA. But I agree wholeheartedly, we should have it in every school.
Representative Kahn.
FFA is not, I mean, we could just be working with FFA to do this. We don't need to tell them to do it by state law. Is that correct?
Correct. Or, excuse me, Mr. Chairman. Correct.
Representative Hamilton.
Correct.
Well, I would just suggest that as a project. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Seeing no further discussion, any last... Oh, Representative Poppy, I'm sorry I didn't see you. All right.
That's okay, Mr. Chair. I just want to follow up on this. Certainly we should have FFA in every school. FFA is a co-curricular activity. We need ag teachers in every school in order to be able to have FFA. So it has to be combined with agriculture. We have, unfortunately, not been able to educate enough ag teachers throughout the state. That is a whole nother discussion when we go into higher education and other things. If we could actually solve that problem, then we would have more ag teachers, we'd be able to have FFA, we'd be able to do many more things.
Well,
Representative Kahn.
I don't know how you quite define an ag teacher. I'm sure I'm the only person here who was actually on the faculty for one at some point at the College of Agriculture at the university and actually even published a paper in an agriculture journal. So, you know, I don't really think of myself as an agriculture expert, but it's a very broad field these days.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, my very first teaching position, Mr. Chairman, was in southern Minnesota. And we had an FFA chapter, and one of my students was the state champion in the meat judging contest. And the footnote there, he was a town kid. His dad operated the local meat market.
Oh.
So he had acquired some skills, I think, at home. But he was one of the town kids that participated. So point being that when you talk FFA, town kids, city kids can be involved and learn a lot. It would be just another after-school activity that would be a positive.
That's right. Thank you.
Mr. Hamilton, any last words on your bill?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's an honor to chair the Agriculture Committee, and I ask for your support. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your work, Chair Hamilton. At this time, we'll temporarily lay over House File 3888 as amended.
Too bad. It would be fun to vote for that.
Next, we have Chair McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. McNamara moves that House File 3890 be referred to the General Register. And Chair McNamara, we've got a couple of amendments. Do you want to take those now?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I believe the proper motion is to be laid over.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. We've got a fair amount of noise in the room as people are reshuffling here, I guess, for the bill. Which memo would you like to take first, Chair McNamara?
Mr. Chair and members, I just want to clarify, I'm moving the bill to be laid over.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair, I first would like to take up the A11, and then I have an amendment to the A11 amendment.
All right.
Would you like, and that's the A14 amendment, Mr. Chair, and I can, you want me to walk through the amendment to the amendment first?
Well, let's do this. Chair McNamara moves the A11 amendment, and then Chair McNamara moves the A14 amendment to the amendment. So I guess why don't you walk through whichever one you want to walk through in which order?
Mr. Chair and members, if it's okay, I'll kind of walk through them both. The amendment to the amendment just clarifies the $3,000 for the prescribed burn study should come from a prescribed an account that's appropriate for that instead of out of a forestry account. And then the baseline amendment actually clarifies two things, that the water safety coordinator actually works in the Parks and Trails Division, not enforcement, so we clarify that. And then the second part of it, we had some kind of defining language there that we removed about permit numbers and the name of the company in regards to the Cold Spring Creek area. Probably more appropriate. We normally don't do that, actually identify the company name or the well permit numbers. So, Mr. Chair, that I guess you'd really say they're kind of technical. I'd stand for questions.
All right. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been following the Cold Spring, and Their problem is they have nitrogen in their water, and I just would hope you would report to us how much nitrogen is in the wells that you are asking for more water from, the 4, 5, and 6.
Chair McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Wagenius, it's my understanding that the wells they have, now they would be able to blend them and be within state requirements. It more is the potential if they need to go to a new well field, they're reaching out in a direction where it's my understanding if they go in that way for additional water that it probably would need to add a nitrate treatment facility. I would imagine somewhat similar to my own community of Hastings has.
Representative Wagenius.
Just as a follow-up, I mean, my question was not whether they were going to blend the water or not, but how much nitrogen is in each of, what's the nitrogen testing for in each of these wells now?
Chair McNamara.
Mr. Chair and members and Representative Wagenius, I don't know the exact number of the wells 4, 5, and 6 in Cold Spring of their nitrate numbers. I do know that they, Mr. Chair and members, they blend, and they are under the guidelines of state law right now.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, the reason I ask that is because generally nitrogen is a marker for other contaminants, and we just want to see what we're doing for the folks of Cold Spring. I mean, because this is citizens. It's not just a little nitrogen in your beer, but it's also for the citizens. So if I could move to another, the other part of the amendment.
Sure, Representative Guinness.
Okay. So this prescribed burn, I'm a big fan of prescribed burning, and you probably know that, but I don't understand the long-term intention of this study. I mean, I just, so if you could help us out here.
Chair McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius. Do you want me to get into, or would, if that's more to the bill, should I get to that when I was going to do
fine.
A walkthrough, but some of your
That'd
questions may get answered
right.
in my
any,
walkthrough.
Any other questions to the A14 amendment to the amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of the A14 amendment to the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment to the amendment is adopted. Members, now we have the A11 amendment as amended before us. Any further questions on the A11 amendment as amended? Seeing none, all in favor of the A11 amendment as amended, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The A11 amendment as amended is adopted. And then Representative McNamara, we have the A13 amendment also. Do you want to move that amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'll move the A13 to be incorporated into House File 3890. Mr. Chair and members, I'll do a walkthrough of this amendment. This amendment is the DNR policy bill. It's a very small bill, and we just thought it might make sense to put it in the finance bill at the same time, as it's my understanding that's probably what the Senate is going to do. It updates current aquatic invasive species law. It makes AIS penalties default from a criminal to a civil penalty. And then the one probably substance thing that's in the bill is it allows a pilot project on Lake Minnetonka where some marinas on Lake Minnetonka would be able to have custody of a boat, and the boat would leave to maybe a storage facility across the road and store it on different property, and then that boat, they would acknowledge that the boat is in their custody the whole time and that it will be going back into Lake Minnetonka, and then it's not necessary to completely decontaminate it as if the boat may leave for somewhere else. It's something we've heard from some of the marine operators and seems to make sense. So we're just doing it on a pilot basis to see how it works, because we want to be quite careful. And then there's a report back to the legislature on that. And that's basically the highlights of that bill and the amendment.
Okay, discussion of the A13 amendment. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I see where you've made it the civil penalty. Did you say you stop it from being a criminal penalty, or you just are creating a new civil penalty and not decriminalizing the current act?
Chair McNamara.
Thank you, Chairman and Representative Hillstrom. It makes the AIS penalties that would have defaulted to a criminal penalty under current statute now are identified to be civil penalties. Does that make sense for somebody in your area of expertise?
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the only reason why I'm asking about this is currently under some of the criminal statutes, you have the ability to seize materials, and you have the ability to forfeit. By making it a civil penalty, I believe that you eliminate that ability. So is it your intention then that if someone, you know, continues to cross-contaminate, that there's nothing that they can do to remove the property that they are cross-contaminating the water with?
Chair McNamara.
Mr. Chair and members, I guess Representative Hillstrom, if you want to more clarification, like what happens to a repeat offender and what tools are available to the DNR, it might be best if DNR was to answer that question. I wouldn't want to think that I can answer that one.
We have someone from DNR here that could answer that question. Hello, sir. Welcome to the Ways and Means Committee. Can you please state your name for the record and give us your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. Mr. Chairman, Representative Hillstrom, this language was discussed in the Civil Law Committee, I believe, and we do not have the authority right now to confiscate those, like a boat or boat lift or things like that, for these offenses. These would be a first offense for failing to decontaminate your boat. So rather than make them go through the criminal process, we would just be issuing them a civil citation, $250 for failing to comply with the decontamination order when a decontamination unit is on site. So this would be a case where a person would not agree to have their boat cleaned when we have a boat wash right at that facility. The other option would be to tag that piece of equipment, some language we had last year, and then allow that person to go to a decontamination site or facility and have it done professionally. So if they decline that, and if they didn't take the course, which they, if you get a penalty for this, then you have to take an online course. So now, rather than a criminal citation, it'll be $25. I believe we have other authorities in law for repeat violators and other ways to get at those types of egregious offenders and try to bring them into compliance rather quickly. So this is just the first-time offense piece we're looking at.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to make that clarification. And two, what then is the penalty if they, for example, fail to do the training course that you require them to do?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, representatives, right now you'll see on line 7.29 the failure for taking the course would be a $25 penalty.
Any other questions for Mr. Meyer? Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, it seems odd to clog up civil courts that are so busy right now. Why aren't we doing administrative penalties, which are easier, or are we? What's the rationale there? It doesn't make sense to me.
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Guineas, the intention was to allow a civil citation so we'd be able to issue them just a ticket on site that they could go through and just pay, call up and pay with their debit card or whatever. It's tried to not to bring these things into the court system in the first place was our intent.
Representative Guineas.
The question is, what if they don't? I mean, that is so, in that case, it seems that you're going the harder route. And because you're not going to take a $250 penalty to court, and people are going to find out about that. Oh, you don't pay it, DNR is not going to hire a lawyer and take it to court. So where's the penalty here?
Mr. Meyer?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guineas, our intention was to allow people to come into compliance for the penalty rather quickly. If it would go to court, the county attorneys are our prosecutors for these types of things, so we would work with them on that. I would assume most people, if you're failing to comply with the decontamination order, it's kind of a cut and dry deal. You're either going to do it or you're not going to do it. You're going to get the penalty, and either you're going to pay it or we'll have to seek other remedies. So our hope would be people would pay their penalty, but if not, we'll have to see what we can do and just see where it goes from there. I mean, our intention is to simplify the process and to spend our time focusing on the people we need to focus on within the violation system. And this would allow a person, hopefully it would be a learning opportunity for them. They would realize what they need to do, get a ticket, pay it, and move forward and obey the law.
Any other questions for Mr. Meyer? Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, a slightly different issue, but while Mr. Meyer's at the table, in the bill, there's an appropriation for legal fees. And Mr. Meyer, did DNR make that selection or did MMB? And, Mr. Chairman, the reason I'm raising that question, I've heard from some groups that they are concerned about the high cost. It's apparently a Washington, D.C. firm that's much more expensive than a local firm would be. Probably many of us on the committee maybe have received those communications. And I guess I'd like to get a little background on that. And the other question they raise, and I'm not raising the question about the overall question about hiring attorneys. I'm interested as an Appropriations Committee here, or Finance Committee, about the costs that some are raising. And then the other question was, is there a firm enough wall, because they also represent mining companies, and this is dealing with the mining issue. And so I guess I'm asking, are we getting the best bang for the buck for in terms of the $400 per hour fee is what I hear? And then in addition to that, is there an adequate wall within that law firm if the decision is to be or to stay with them?
Okay, before I have Mr. Meyer answer that question, I guess we do have the A13 amendment before us. That's what we're really technically on here. I kind of had, as long as he was up there,
That's a fine question.
I guess is there anyone else who's got a question on the A13 amendment? I don't have anyone else on my list. Seeing none, all in favor of the A13 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The A13 amendment is adopted. Okay, so now, Representative McNamara.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm fine if we want to go right to questions, or did you want me to walk through the bill? I mean, I'm fine, whatever.
You know, Representative Carlson, would you be okay if we walked through the bill? Maybe some of your questions might be answered
Mr.
at that
Chairman,
point.
The only reason I raised it then was you said
was Mr. Meyer. Yeah, well, we'll bring Mr. Meyer back.
I can wait. Very well. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Okay, See Chair you. McNamara, please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 3890 now is the Environment Natural Resources Policy and Finance Bill. The funding provisions are there's $225,000 from the water management account for monitoring and modeling of groundwater in the Cold Spring area. That's a good provision that we worked with DNR, Representative Howe up in that area, have come up with an innovative idea of reducing the pumping from the it would be between the city and the brewery. They could decide which of the wells. There's two wells near closest to the spring. They would reduce some of the pumping there and then be able to increase from the wells 3, 4, and 5, I believe are the numbers, farther away from the river. And it seems like a common sense thing. And then it allows to study that situation and see what is the long-term solution for Cold Springs. And we've already talked a little bit about there's some nitrates at different levels in different wells, and actually the needs within the city are different. The brewery can use some water higher in nitrate than you want for drinking water for some of their different products they sell, be it not only beer as a brewery, but they also do some energy drinks. Mr. Chair, there's $1.5 million reduction of the general fund to forest management, and then there's $1.5 million increase from FMIA, the forest management investment account. That nets out at a zero. There's $3,000 for a report on the Sands Dune State Forest public engagement report. That's some stuff going on up in the Sand Dunes Forest, Representative Neuberger's area, where they're doing some conversion of existing state forest lands and trying to figure out just is this state forest land, what should it be. And so we came to a good agreement with DNR in how that's going forward. So there's a couple $1,000, $3,000 in there for that. There's $2.3 million from the state park account for parks and trails management. Even though we fully funded DNR's parks and trails last year, there's a shortfall, and so this is some of their money that's in that account, and it'll be sent out to them. And then, Mr. Chair, we are fully funding the purchase of a new DNR helicopter, and I believe next Tuesday it'll be on the grounds between 10 and noon. Is that right, Commissioner? Yes, they're nodding. Yes, it's a new helicopter, and we originally thought it made the most sense to buy a used one, and then with consultation with legislators and DNR, they were able to, for only about $670,000 more, actually purchase a brand new one with the full warranty and get it built to their exact specifications. We worked together on that. There's Representative Carlson's question, there's $5.4 million to the DNR for potential polymet litigation, and up to $1.432 million would be able to be transferred to other agencies such as MPCA if needed for the same purpose. There's $25,000 from the Minnesota Forest Resource Fund. For those of us that have been around long enough, that's an old fund that used to be involved with LCMR when they worked on the tobacco cigarette money things. And so that money is being used for the Aggregate Resource Task Force. And then we eliminated that fund because it doesn't serve a purpose anymore. There's $250,000 from the State Forest Suspense Account to accelerate school trust land developments. Mr. Bandolin's doing some great work over there, and thank you, Governor, for appointing him. It seems like that's going well. We removed, at the request of the Iron Range, some Iron Range legislators and the DNR, we removed one time only, I must say, a required match in last year's budget bill for mineral co-op environmental research and iron ore co-op research. The match is not required. As we all know, the taconite industry has been through some unprecedented tough times with the illegal dumping of steel and the fact that our blast furnaces are not set up necessarily. We're not sending our taconite or doing it for the right furnaces, so they give them a regroup chance one time there. Policy provisions, maybe I should whip through some of those that we didn't talk about. Tribal members will now be able to rice without having to have a ricing license, a good provision. Sophia's law, that's Representative Hertas's law that many of us have worked on carbon monoxide detectors in regards to homes, fish houses, things like that. Now we're going to extend those to boats, especially boats that have a spot where people could go down what's commonly referred to as a cab, a cuddy. And so we're reaching out to them, and there is $50,000, if I'm remembering the numbers right, out of the water rec account for that work. Prescribed burn language we talked about. There is a investment in the minerals management account will be quarterly now instead of annually, get a better return. Some language about expedited land exchange for school trust. And then some more language about school trust stuff I could get into more if people have questions, but it's just allowing what it will, I should mention, it will allow for some of the old growth forest and boat landings that are on school trust land to be exchanged with either like lands or with money when DNR sells some land so that we meet the constitutional requirements that school trust land be held for the maximum benefit of the kids. Creation of an aggregate resource task force. We talked about the sand dune forest. Cold Springs, I think we've talked pretty much about. That's pretty much, Mr. Chair. I think the big things is, thank you. We did have a $3.9 million of new money in our bill, and the reality is that money went for the DNR in anticipation of lawsuits, and as Representative Carlson has noted, they have hired a firm. It was a challenge to find firms that weren't already, what do they call that when you're already, I'm missing the legal term. Representative Hillstrom, what's it called? Conflicted. It was a real complicated word, Mr. Chair. I couldn't get it out. So they went, they had to go to D.C. to find a firm qualified to help out the Attorney General, evidently, understandably. It's a very complex area of law. And so, Mr. Chair, I would stand for questions. It's a good bill. I think it's got strong support. And so we did a good job with the limited amount of that money that you did give us. Thank you.
And Chair McNamara, I know you've walked through a fair amount of this. Do you have anyone that you want to walk through the spreadsheet as well?
No, Mr. Chair, I think I hit all the items. I think I can answer them. If not, Mr. Hagemeyer and Ms. Taylor are both behind me, and usually they can, but after I've walked through it a few times already, I thought I could handle it myself.
All right, sounds good. Questions for Chair McNamara. Representative Carlson.
Chairman, being that I put the question out there, and I thank Representative McNamara for his description of it, but I would like to get a little more information. There are those, let me put it this way, in the community that have communicated with at least some of us about the high cost. That was one issue. And the number that some of them are using is like $400 an hour. Now, I've hired a lawyer twice in my life for a home purchasing home to review the legal documents, and then when I did estate planning. So I don't know what a lawyer really costs per hour. There are maybe some people at the table. I know you've had some recent experience over a building and legal costs, I think. But at any rate, people are expressing some concern about the high cost. That's one question, and I think Representative McNamara touched a little bit on why the Washington, D.C. firm, due to their expertise. But the other question that people in the community are raising is the ethical wall, because they do represent people on the other side of these kinds of issues. So if and I'm not sure who actually made that selection, whether it was MMB, DNR, or the Attorney General's office. I guess I'd like to hear from whoever would be able to give us some information as to why that $400 per hour, if that's accurate, is accumulating to an appropriation here of $5.4 million. And then some in the community are saying that that's not going to be the total cost, that there probably will be additional costs beyond that. So if it would be all right with you, Mr. Chair, maybe we could hear whoever has that background. Mr. Myers is at the table. Maybe he's the right one. I don't know.
But Mr. Meyer, can you Representative McNamara?
Well, Mr. Chair, maybe I could start. As far as the actual picking, and Commissioner Meyer can talk about how the firm got picked and their expertise. It's my understanding they are a law firm with expertise in mining issues. I'm not sure when Representative Carlson talked about which side of the issue they're on. They're there on behalf of the state's interest. We don't know who's going to sue the state, but the anticipation is it will come from one of the two sides, and we tried to pick a firm that would defend the state's position because the attorney general probably doesn't have the expertise in mining law, and so that's why they were picked. It's my understanding in the negotiations with the administration, they felt they got a very strong rate on what they're paying, and I would let Commissioner Meyer say specifically if you want individual rates, like what a senior lawyer is getting or the paralegal and such, those are legitimate questions, and if we don't have them here, we could get the answers, Mr. Chair. But to Representative Carlson's other question, I would want to be forthright and honest. I don't think that this necessarily is the last time you will see me before your committee, Mr. Chair, requesting additional money for lawsuits to defend the state of Minnesota on this issue. I think as this issue moves forward in future bienniums, we could be back here to ask for more money depending on who and how many times we get sued on the issue.
Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, sorry, Representative Carlson.
I might just say, when I say on the other side, what I've been told is that they also represent the National Mining Association. That's where the issue of the wall comes in. I guess I'd like to hear from DNR then, I guess, if you're the spokesperson on this issue, how the comfort level as to how firm that wall is, and I'm not making any charges that anybody in that law firm would be unethical, but there are people in the community that have that concern, and then the cost factor. You know, I think it's clear you're going to experience some legal fees. I mean, that's, but are we getting the best bang for the buck, I guess, is the question.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources, for the record. Let me just start by backing us up to November 20th of 2015. Commissioner Myron Franz did submit to the Legislative Advisory Commission a request pursuant to Minnesota Statute 8.065 for a contract for legal services between Crowell Mooring and the State of Minnesota, the Pollution Control Agency, Department of Natural Resources, relating to the review and permitting of North Met Mining Project and Land Exchange. Out of that meeting was a signed agreement allowing the state to go forward and into a contract with this firm. The firm was vetted and selected through MMB, through an RFP process, representing what they thought and we agreed with was the best representation the state could get for this project. We're anticipating litigation either from the company itself or from proponents against the project as we move forward. We were appropriated $750,000 through the biennial budget last year, $300,000 in 2016, $450,000 in FY17. We've already committed $209,000, obligated $209,000 for the 2016 appropriation, so we anticipate all of those funds to be spent before the end of fiscal year 16. The FY17 dollars are going to be spent relatively quickly as well. Out of this amount, the 3.929, $1.2 million of it is for a documents management system, electronic management system. We have over 60,000 individual documents that we need to code and key into this system for us, our permitting development, and also for preparing our case for litigation, which we do anticipate at some point in time in the near future. So with that, we have other needs that are out there, but $1.2 million of that will be for the document system, which the Pollution Control Agency will share and participate in. As far as the rates, Commissioner Myron Franz was able to negotiate what we thought was a fair rate with the company. Actually, it's a little bit less than what their going rates are, from what I understand. And in our agreement with them, we're paying $410 an hour for partners and counsel advice, $310 an hour for associates and counsel, and $200 for paralegal fees. Now, the work to date has been in preparing the record for the final environmental impact statement, but also preparing our record and getting our record in order. As you'll know, the best offense is a good defense in most cases, and it's particularly in a legal fee challenge or a legal court case challenge, you want to make sure your record is as tight and complete as possible. And that's what our expenditures to date have been spent on. So we feel we are getting a good value for the state's dollar. We feel the company is very knowledgeable and they aren't conflicted. As you know, it's the job of the firm to ensure that they don't have a conflict. It's not our role to make sure that they don't have a conflict, but we've done our due diligence and believe that the people we have working on this for the state of Minnesota do not have a conflict on anything, and they will provide the best defense to the state one way or the other as we proceed. In the next calendar year, there's at least seven or more different actions that we feel could be challenged in the courts, both state and federally. So in preparing the record for each one of those, drafting memos, you know, case management hearing status, conference committee, administrative record disputes, these costs add up relatively quickly. So we've been spending, as I said, about $65,000 to $70,000 a month in billable activities with the attorney fees, and we anticipate that to continue.
Representative Carlson?
Mr. Chairman, I did have that communication, and actually, I've had a couple, three conversations of late, and I said, well, I'll raise the question. And there's no doubt from what I know that there probably were going to be some legal fees, but my point was, is that an appropriate amount? And the other one was, being that it's a law firm that also represents mining and industry, I'm reflecting what I've heard from the community, or some people in the community who have expressed concern about basically those two issues, the ethical division or ethical wall and the cost. It sounds like DNR is, in their words, has done due diligence. Others may know better than I what reasonable cost per hour would be. That's why I said I've only had a couple of lawyers in my entire life, and it's been small personal things. Buying two houses, I should say. I guess I've had three. I bought two houses in my time and did my estate planning, and then those three instances had legal advice. So beyond that, I've had very little personal knowledge about what legal fees are. So I'll just leave it to others to follow up the questions if they have an interest. Thank you.
Representative Wagenius, then Hornstein. Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you. Just to follow up on this, just a comment that I understand putting up an information wall in this law firm because they do have expertise, but it does seem to me you're walling off the expertise, and so we will be using attorneys that don't have the expertise. And it's maybe, Representative Carlson, what we're doing is spending money to train a new group of attorneys for them. I always, because what we really do want is expertise, but it does seem we're walling them off. But I would go on to another subject if that would be okay.
Sure.
Okay. Let's back up on the Cold Spring. Because I thought I heard you say, and I just wanted to clarify, that it was okay with the brewery to have nitrates in the water.
Mr. Chairman. Meyer, want to respond to that?
Mr. Jason?
No. Or Chair McNamara?
Thank you. I was just wondering if one of the DNR staff happened to be here, I wouldn't have expected him to. I was going to have him come down and answer the question. But Representative Wagenius, some of the products made by the brewery, nitrates are not a problem in the actual creation. And if I'm not mistaken, I think is it the beer or the energy drinks? The energy drinks, when they create those, the nitrates are not a problem. I don't know if it's in the process or what it is, but or maybe my grandkids aren't drinking energy drinks, so we're not worried about it. But my understanding is that nitrates are not an issue for some of the brewery issues.
Okay. Representative Wiggins.
Okay. My concern would be the Cold Spring residents, not the brewery, and not the people drinking the whatever. So where are the nitrates coming from that are actually getting into this? Do we know?
The source of the nitrates?
Mm-hmm.
No, if we knew that, we'd be very bright.
So you don't know at all where the source of the nitrates is?
I can't say that anybody has absolutely determined where the source of the nitrates. You or I could speculate.
No, I didn't want speculation. I just wanted to know where they were, because if that's the problem, then we should be looking for the cure. So we have to understand the problem, and I was just asking if you knew the problem. And
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to ask Representative Wagini as a clarifying question. Are you asking me which wells have higher nitrate levels, or where did the nitrates come from that are in the wells?
Both.
And the wells that have higher nitrates are the ones located farther away from the stream of the wells identified that the city is using, and the well field, potential future well field, has a higher nitrate level potentially too that's located farther away from the stream. I think we could speculate what those nitrates may be from, but in my case it would be speculation. I don't know if Commissioner Meyer or somebody from DNR wants to say if they have any ideas, or somebody from Ag or something wants to say where they think the nitrates might be from.
Representative Wiggins.
Well, since we're looking for a cure, that's not a question you have to answer today, but it would be helpful to get that from the department between now and the floor. Can I ask another question about?
Sure. Well, Representative Wiggins, how about we're going to change the subject. How about if I come back to you in a minute and go to some other people that have had questions? Representative Hornstein.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I was just going to comment on the law. I don't know if we've moved on.
No,
that,
go ahead.
And just briefly, I want to reiterate one point that Representative Carlson made and highlight a concern from Commissioner Myers, Assistant Commissioner Myers' testimony, which is my concern, in addition to the costs that Representative Carlson outlined, is that this firm has known and documented very close ties to industry, which, of course, that's their prerogative, but we're really talking about a public sector interest here. And when Mr. Meyer said, we could get some pressure from the industry side, we could get pressure from the environmental side, I have concerns about this firm's very close ties to industry and how they would be able to, effectively litigate on behalf of the state with those ties. And perhaps it would be more appropriate to have a public sector firm on this rather than one that's so closely identified with industry. So I don't know, Mr. Meyer, if you wanted to comment. I know your perspective on this, but I was very interested in your comment about possible industry pressure, and I had not heard that before. I mean, what would be an example of where the industry might litigate against the state on this particular issue?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, take your last question first, I guess. I would assume if we were to deny a permit, there's a series of things that need to take place as this project moves forward. So, if there were to say a denial of a permit to mine decision, perhaps, I'm just speculating here, Mr. Chair members, but that could bring a court action from the company, I would assume. Likewise, there's a number of federal interventions going from land exchanges to core permits to air permits that could be challenged from the proponent side as well. So those are just a couple examples. I mean, all we know is we're anticipating substantial legal costs to occur through this process, and we want to make sure that we have the appropriation in hand to deal with those, because we don't have the ability to pay. The snowmobilers aren't going to pay for this. People who are spending money at the parks aren't going to pay for this, and the department's budget is so compartmentalized, we don't have the ability just to spend general fund. We have a lot of legal fees that come out of different funds, but we don't have a fund to do this right now.
Representative Hornstein.
One last comment, Mr. Chair. That's what I worry about the scenarios that Mr. Meyer outlined. I mean, we could end up with a fox guarding the hen house type of situation, you know, with this particular firm. So, you know, that's my concern with it, in addition to the cost, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, I'm looking at page 14 of the bill, water control for Big Lake. Specifically, how are you going to fill up that lake, Mr. Meyer?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, members, this is actually... Mr. Chair, members, Bob Meyer, DNR. This is actually reducing the level and fluctuating the level up and down with the weir is what they want to do. It's a shallow lake. We're in conversations with the watershed district. Some, they want it to be higher during parts of the year and lower between other parts of the year, so there's a manipulable weir that we're in conversations with the watershed district on how to do this. And you can see the differences. There's a difference of a foot. Part of it is they want it drawn down so there would be water retention available in the springtime, and then go back up again so they can use it again. So it's a very different issue than what we were working on in your district, Representative Dean.
Representative Dean.
Well, I was just going to point out that if you have extra water, be happy to take it off your hands. But also, how much have you spent this up to this point on litigation for White Bear Lake, if you know, Mr. Meyer?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dean, I can get back to you on our actual costs, but one of the things that I've been meaning to talk with you and the committee about is, as that court case is scheduled to be heard next March, we're anticipating that legal bill to be between $700,000 and $1 million as well. So I would anticipate that we'll be back with another appropriation request for that during the biennial budget process. So we spent probably $150,000, $200,000 to date out of general fund water money, because it's an equal waters related division. And I'll get you the exact appropriation we have for that, but we're anticipating legal fees for that court case, which is scheduled at the beginning of March 2017, and we're anticipating it to be about a five-week trial with a lot of experts and things like that. And the latest cost estimate I had, I think, was about $750,000.
Representative Dean?
And the attorney on the other side, who's representing the lake?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dean, I believe the Cerisi firm is one firm involved. I'm not sure who the other litigants are. I know the City of White Bear Lake has their attorney on. City of White Bear Township has also joined in the lawsuit, so they have their town attorney on there as well.
Representative Dean.
Not an inexpensive firm to go up against, so hope we get that figured out ahead of time.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That he brought up the section that I was going to ask a question on, and this is on page 14. So on 1413, line 1413, you are, this bill demands that that this Big Lake in Grant County be maintained at an elevation of 1,073, which is substantially below its natural outlet, as I understand. Am I correct about that?
Mr. Meyer?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guinness, I'm not sure of the exact number, but I can get that for you.
I'm quite sure it is substantially below. And so if it's below the natural outlet by a wide mark, then you're going to have to do some major building. And, of course, nobody's put the cost in here, but the bigger question I have, this will require condemnation of private land. I've never heard of an instance where we have demanded that an elevation of a lake be brought down with the total implication that we're going to condemn private land. I've never heard of a thing like that before. Do you know of another instance like this?
Mr. Meyer, or Chair McNamara.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Representative Wagenius, why don't I get back to you before we get to the floor? It's my understanding DNR is working close with the locals out there, the local watershed, affected landowners nearby, and the county on a resolution. The process has been slow and frustrating for all those people at the local level, and to simplify it, it's not my understanding that they're trying to pump it or condemn land or any of that. They want to be able to lower the level to better be prepared for when there's flooding. And I can get more information exactly. It's in Representative Backer's district is where it is, and he's worked close. And Commissioner Meyer, to the DNR's benefit, has been working diligently to set up meetings with them. And you know how it is getting meetings set up. The meeting is set up for in the next couple of weeks, and it's my hope before we would that we could potentially have this issue resolved, Mr. Chair and members.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, I do know the numbers, and or I wouldn't have asked the question. But what is being demanded here is to maintain an elevation not only below the high water mark, but below the natural outlet, which would involve major construction. And the only way you get major construction done is to condemn private land. And I think that, Mr. Chairman, I've never seen that. I've never seen the legislature demand that. And we don't have a cost of that in this bill. I can't imagine it comes for free. I know it doesn't. So on this basis alone, I have to vote against this bill. This is setting a precedent that I've never seen before.
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, this is not a department initiative. We have been working with the author and with the chairman to try to resolve the issue, so we do not support the language in the bill. We're hopeful, as Representative McNamara said, is to come up with a resolution before this bill would be passed off of the floor in its final shape that everybody can support. The meeting that we have with the watershed is scheduled for May 6th, the earliest we could get it. But we do share in Representative Wagenius' concerns and want to come up with a resolution that everybody can support.
Representative Cornish, to that point.
I was just going to say that while I was working with the DNR, we had a number of these cases. So water fluctuated on up and down where they would set the different ordinary high water mark. In fact, they almost completely drained Swan Lake near Nicollet for a project to bring back habitat. And I think of a court cases where they have the DNR come in and testify where the judges fluctuate the water level on structures by inches down in Waseca County, and so it's actually a fairly common practice.
No, it's not.
Representative Wagenius?
No. What is in this bill is not common practice. To set in statute, we're setting it in statute, not negotiation between parties. We're setting it in statute at a level below the natural drainage, which means that we're going to have major construction, which means private property rights will be implicated, probably condemnation. I think that's not all clear in the language of that bill. It's very misleading. And as I said, this is reason enough for me to vote against the bill. Bad precedent.
Other discussion to the bill. Representative Cornish?
Well, actually, they do set water levels, and there is the water level set, and the judges have come in and engineered them and put the actual inches in elevation. I don't know if you would call that in law, but have made rulings that said you will not fluctuate the water level from so many feet and inches, and have set levels for lakes before. So,
other discussion to the bill. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, since 2011, how many additional lakes have been infested with maybe the top leading numbers of aquatic invasive species that you're concerned about?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Drazkowski, I don't have that number available at the top of my head, but I will certainly get back to you. I can tell you this, that the spread in Minnesota is much, much less than any other surrounding states or any state in the nation. So we are making headway. We'll never stop the spread, but we are slowing it dramatically. So I will get those numbers for you.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Drazkowski.
So I'm just curious. I look forward to those. I see we are in this, and I should have discussed this maybe with the amendment, but we're adding even more more limitations on the ability of Minnesotans to use our water resources. And, you know, we started this back in 11, and we seem to add more and more every year, more things that Minnesotans aren't allowed to do, more consequences for them doing things they would normally do. Representative McNamara, was this provision that's in the amendment, was this entertained before your committee?
Chair McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Drazkowski, which provision are you talking about?
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The provision on page 7 of the original last amendment, you had the A13. Consequences for failing to comply with decontamination, et cetera. There's three different ones there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Drazkowski, thanks for clarifying that. I did run the gamut on going through the different committees on this one because we knew we would need to. And this is the one where actually we're lowering the penalty. This is the one Representative Hillstrom, I believe it was Representative Hillstrom, said, why are we letting them skate? Or maybe it was Representative Wagenius. So it was Representative Wagenius. I don't want to speak for her. But she said, why are we not going after these people more? Representative Drazkowski, I think you'll like the provision. We actually allow them to just pay a civil penalty and not to go have to go through our court system. We're lightening the load for our taxpayers.
I'll have to, Mr. Chair, so Representative McNamara, was it discussed before your committee?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, it was discussed before Representative Hackbar's committee. And then we went, we made at least one more stop in, like Representative Sanders' committee, Representative Hackbarth. I had to go.
Civil law.
Civil law. I had to go to, before Representative Scott's committee and then back to our environment committee, and it did pass from all three.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative McNamara, I'll talk to you more about it offline. Thank you.
And
Chair McNamara.
Mr. Chair and Representative Drazkowski, it's House File 2866 was the original bill part of that. Thank you.
Representative Wagenius.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to remind Representative McNamara that he was going to discuss his intention of the prescribed burning study.
Oh, yeah.
Chair McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, and Commissioner Meyer can correct me if I have this wrong. But what we're trying to do here, Mr. Chair and members, is recognizing that we have burning requirements. Some of them impact, or they impact our whole state, but the consequences of prescribed burns in northeastern Minnesota are quite a bit different than they are in southwestern Minnesota. So in other words, if you're burning a prairie, it could be a wildlife management area, a CRP, could be private property. Maybe it's completely surrounded by this time of year by black fields. There's less hazards involved with the burning of that as opposed to burning a forested area, which we actually do, Mr. Chair and members. We do prescribe burns up in the forested area for natural regeneration in the forest. Well, it's very complicated to light the forest on fire in northeastern Minnesota in the spring of the year. So what we're trying to do, and DNR, I commend Director Bowe and Assistant Director Schmidt for working on the issue with the private sector that do burnings, the NGOs, people like Nature Conservancy, MnDOT, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, DNR Wildlife, and DNR Forestry, coming together to create some sideboards and controls in the prairie region. As you mentioned, Representative Wagenius, burns are very great tool, and it hopefully will allow for more efficient. It was good discussion, and they need to come back with a report on some potential adjustments to those, to that work.
Representative Wagenius.
So I'm not understanding the outcome of this. I mean, I am a fan of burning, so we're not. I'm just trying to understand what your intention here, because I don't. I thought the system was working quite well. So what's the problem we're trying to solve?
Well, specifically, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Wagenius, there could be a small considered prairie burn, and I'm thinking of one in Smead Manufacturing in Hastings, has a parking lot with a rainwater garden in the middle of it that they may want to burn once in a while. Well, it because it's got buildings on the side and it's in town, There's not as much wind there. There's a very limited ability for that fire to spread anywhere because it's surrounded by blacktop. Current law doesn't allow for those situations to say, well, on a day when it might not be appropriate to burn somewhere else, you could burn this small area that's surrounded by blacktop. Or it may not be appropriate to burn the forested in St. Louis County, but maybe down in Rock County or Big Stone County, there's a grassland that there's no buildings within half a mile, and so there's a limited chance of spread. So the requirements on those fires and the people that man those fires are different than what we want up north. And the interesting thing was what we found out is sometimes DNR had to have some of the important forestry people going out to watch those fires where there really was not a need for them, when they would have been better maybe up north or somewhere else where there's a need. So I think it'll allow, you asked the outcome, I think the outcome will be, there potentially will be more efficient burning. Specifically, I think there could be some more burning done that's not happening now.
Okay. Any other discussion from members? Any last words, Chair McNamara?
No, thank you.
All right. With that, members, I'm going to temporarily lay over the bill. House File 3890, as amended, is temporarily laid over. And members, then, unless anyone's got any questions, we are in recess until 7:30, when we will take up the jobs bill. Good evening, everyone. We're going to reconvene the meeting and come out of recess. Representative Garofalo moves House File 3931 be referred to the General Register. And Representative Garofalo, I believe there's one amendment, the 1105 amendment. Do you want to move that amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Garofalo moves the 1105 amendment. Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this amendment is for a bill that is currently in the Rules Committee. It's a Sanders bill regarding the placement of telecommunications infrastructure. It's going to make it easier to deploy additional infrastructure. I'm not aware of any opposition to it. I was approached by this and asked to attach this to the bill. That's what I'm doing today.
Discussion to the 1105 amendment. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Although we might not be aware of any opposition, you might want to ask, because it's pretty substantial, you might want to ask if there's anyone in the audience that would dispute the Honorable Chair and want to come down and say any words. I think he's right, but you should ask the audience to see if there's something different.
I can't imagine anyone wanting to dispute the Honorable Chair, but is there anyone in the office that might oppose the amendment?
I might want to rephrase that on this amendment.
Anyone want to testify on the amendment, 1105 amendment? I don't think I see anyone.
Well,
all right. Any other discussions of the 1105 amendment? Okay, seeing no discussion, all in favor of the A16-1105 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The 1105 amendment is adopted. Representative Garofalo, I don't think there are any other amendments, are there?
I don't have any.
Okay. Any other amendments that anyone has? Otherwise, why don't you go ahead and present the bill, Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. This is the Job Growth, Energy Affordability, Policy and Finance Committee's omnibus bill for the session. I'll cover the fiscal notes. First of all, the target for our committee was $11,121,000 above base. In the tails, the committee met a target of we did not have a tails target, but however, the committee decided to come in below base by approximately $8.5 million. The reductions are primarily in the areas of the Minnesota Investment Fund for $12 million, the Minnesota Job Creation Fund by $8.5 million, the Snowbait Program of $1.5 million. In addition, there is a voiceover IP regulation reform bill that results in a reduction general fund savings. You'll be proud to know that this is a provision that I learned in committee. It was apparently supported by Alec and the Koch brothers. This must have been very surprising to the 16 Democrat governors across the state of Minnesota, across the country, who were in favor of this bill and actually enacted it into law. Inside joke for members of the Jobs Committee. So the voiceover IP regulation provides some savings. In addition, we eliminate the appropriation for the Public Employee Relations Board. So those reductions are in excess of the, on top of the target enhancement the committee was given. And the primary expenditure of those funds went into three areas. Number one is for additional broadband grants totaling $40 million over the next two fiscal years, fully funding the Lewis and Clark Water Program for $11.5 million. And then there is approximately $2.3 million in assistance from Mille Lacs, disaster recovery assistance regarding the changes in fishing policies up there. In addition, there's a couple $100,000 in promotion of tourism on that side. There's some individual allocations that come out of the Workforce Development Fund for some programs that the members of the committee thought were worthwhile. In addition, there's a couple of there's a one-time grant to the Minnesota Department of the Explore Minnesota for major events, tourism events in the state of Minnesota, one-time grant. A little bit of extra staffing requests from the general fund, from the Public Utilities Commission, as well as the Minnesota Department of Commerce, the energy staffing areas. Beyond that, that is a quick summary of the fiscal portions of the bill. I'm happy to take any questions from members of the committee. And, Mr. Chairman, we are 51 minutes from the puck dropping on the Wild versus the Dallas Stars.
Well, and we had this issue last year, too. and I have to say, I was told a constituent was interested in whether it was possible to watch the Wild game on these screens. Representative Garofalo probably could make it work. I know I can't. But perhaps we can get done in 51 minutes. Representative Garofalo, do you want to go through the spreadsheet at all or have staff go through the spreadsheet?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I did cover the major items. That there are. Again, I could go into more detail from the workforce development side, but I did the vast majority of the changes I just, in terms of a dollar amount, I did discover.
All right. Well, then I think members will open it up for questions on the bill as amended. Questions, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Garofalo, on the question of the certificate of need for pipelines, if there was confidence that these projects were needed, why would you fear the scrutiny that's involved in this process?
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hordenstein, the certificate of need process is actually intended to protect ratepayers, generally speaking. So what happens is when we have dedicated service territories in our state, we have monopolies, government-sanctioned monopolies that allow these utilities, they have to guarantee service to those people, but they also have a lot of control over their what they're able to charge and what they're doing. In the certificate of need case, this is private sector money. This is not ratepayer money. In order to go forward with the pipeline, the pipeline companies have to have subscribers and people signed up on a contract. If it doesn't come through, it's a money-losing proposition. There's no incentive to overbuild, whereas under our rate-regulated utility model, there actually is a bit of a financial incentive to overbuild. So the certificate of need in the pipeline process is actually the state telling the private sector, well, yes, there is a need. That's already taken place, Representative Hordenstein. There's a pipeline constructor, and then those who are going to be purchasing the product, who are going to be purchasing space under that pipeline. So there really is, there's still a route permitting process under this. That still involves public input and stuff. But the certificate of need process, in terms of determining if there's a need or not, it doesn't really apply to pipelines, and the private sector has already resolved that for us.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think there is a valid discussion and conversation about, and certainly in the case of the Enbridge pipeline, where this, energy is ultimately ending up and what impacts we have in Minnesota, in terms of, energy usage here. And so I think that piece of it, the supply piece, is important, and I think that is part of the conversation in the certificate of need process.
Other questions for Chair Garofalo? Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm looking at the spreadsheet, and maybe if Representative Garofalo could remind the committee of his target, and then you're moving, I think your presentation centered mainly on your new initiatives and spending, but the money is coming from somewhere. So maybe if you could comment about some of those reductions and what the practical impact of those reductions are. I mean, that's a big part of the bill, and I don't think that was presented at all.
Chair Garofalo.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, I'll repeat this information that I gave in the beginning. First of all, line 15 in the spreadsheet shows the increase of the target to the committee. That's $11,121,000. Then take members down to line 34 and 35. This shows the reductions in the Minnesota Investment Fund as well as the Minnesota Job Creation Fund. Those are items that I covered in the initial overview. And if we go down to lines 40 and 41, this is the Minnesota Film and TV Board as well as the Snowbait Program. Those are the overwhelming majority of the reductions in the bill, and the previous item is the target for the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I maybe missed what you said on a couple of those. The one that I was looking at just a moment ago was the film board. That is an initiative that has paid some dividends in the state of Minnesota in the form of attracting some films and providing some employment. With what you're taking out of the film board, Mr. Chairman, Representative Garofalo, what does that mean relative to the ability then to attract the movie industry to Minnesota, the Snowbait?
Chair Garofalo.
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, first of all, let me apologize. I have to correct one of my earlier statements. I mistakenly was referencing line 15 on the spreadsheet. It's actually line 26 is where it says total general fund impact. That takes into account the general fund revenue changes, so my apologies. The target was $11.6 million, not $11.1 million. With regards to the Minnesota Film and TV Board and the impact on the film industry, the committee felt that a better investment, a better bang for the buck, and to address the issues of rural disparities in our state, that we'd be better off investing those dollars in the broadband infrastructure plan as well as the fully fund the Lewis and Clark pipeline in southwestern Minnesota.
Mr. Chairman, I think there's some other dividends with the film board. It not only has attracted the filmmaking industry here to Minnesota, but it often provides some good advertising and what have you for the state of Minnesota when they're filming here, and especially if they have a successful film. And it's an additional way, and I don't know quite how you put it. Value on that, but it does showcase the state of Minnesota when we do get a film here very often. So I guess I find a few problems in this bill, but that's one of them that I worked on with Senator Cohen a few years ago. I think you may have been one of the conferees at the time, and you supported the conference committee report, so you're reversing yourself perhaps, but I'll stop there, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Riddle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just commenting on Representative Carlson's remarks, the film board, I think, has done some good things over the years, but the fact is that in terms of what goes on around us, the competition, we do so little comparatively. And part of the problem is, if we are going to have the impact that I think you are suggesting, Representative Carlson, we need to give a lot more money. What we're doing right now is not effective. So basically, I would say either just don't do it or make a much larger investment, and I don't think we're prepared to make a much larger investment.
Representative Hornstein.
Thanks again. Another pipeline question, Representative Garofalo. Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the top of page 88, you have one simple sentence: no pipeline facility may participate in a utility conservation improvement program. I think utilities participate in this. They save ratepayers money. They conserve energy. Conservation is straightforward. It's kind of the low-hanging fruit of our energy policy in terms of conserving money and helping the environment. So why would you exempt pipeline facilities when other utilities participate in this?
Chair Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Horstead, if you actually turn to the previous page, you'll actually see what we have in existing law. This is on pages 86 as well as 87. And what you'll see is that there are exceptions to that conservation improvement program, so specifically large energy users. And what has happened is that for some reason, even though this is the largest energy user in what I believe is the Otter Tail Service Territory, the administration has made the choice that the pumping stations are not large energy users. And so what we're doing is we're conforming that that decision to be just a large energy user like the existing statute is for other large energy users.
Representative Hornstein.
But wouldn't we want to, if we were going to make a change, include, you know, all of the energy users and encouraging them to conserve energy?
Chair Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hornstein, again, there's already an exception in process for the largest energy users. So I can understand why some people may say that we should just get rid of that entire exemption for everybody, but that's not an opinion that I share nor the majority of the committee shares. Instead, we thought that it would be best to have the energy that's being used to these pumping stations, because there really isn't much you can do to conserve those. I mean, you can't turn them off. They're going to be buying the most efficient energies in the front, efficient engines on the front side to run these. And so to conform that with other large energy users with current law. But again, I think that if a person wanted to get rid of all the exemptions for all people, all businesses, large energy users, that would probably be a more consistent view that you would agree with rather than just opposing this conforming provision.
Thank you.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a couple questions, but I also have a few remarks, much less volatile than the last time I made remarks about this particular bill, although I still haven't changed any feelings about this bill. But Representative Garofalo, could you explain to me why you pulled $5 million out of the Housing Challenge Program, knowing that you would, without question, you lose millions of dollars in federal funds to match up to the state dollars, causing, you know, workforce housing is one of the biggest issues in greater Minnesota, and you pretty much premised your bill on disparities in greater Minnesota versus urban Minnesota. They built 650 units of housing in greater Minnesota, and the way you've written your bill, they'll likely build less than 300 units of housing, so it looks like it's a lose-lose. So maybe you can explain that to me. I don't understand the $500 million cut.
Chair Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, it wasn't I think you said a $500 million cut. I don't think that's...
With numbers, what the hell?
Yeah. So it's a reprioritization of $5 million. We're not cutting. And what we're doing is we're putting a focus on workforce housing, which, of course, is a tremendous issue in greater Minnesota. The housing pot, the pot of money that was in, there's no requirement that it be used for workforce housing. In fact, it can be used for affordable housing. But the committee felt that it was a stronger argument to use those dollars to focus on economic development in greater Minnesota and to focus on specifically workforce housing. Again, not affordable housing. This is workforce housing to make sure that the open jobs that are out there, the workers that exist, there's a market breakdown in some of these communities, and they lack a place to live in the community. And so the committee felt that was a stronger argument is to focus on workforce housing versus the current program, which is more of a lean towards affordable housing.
Mr.
Representative Mahoney.
Well, Mr. Chair Garofalo, that makes absolutely no sense. Workforce housing standards by the Challenge Grant match up to 95% of the median income in greater Minnesota. So you're taking $5 million from a program that serves 95% of the income earners in greater Minnesota, losing federal dollars to do a workforce housing in greater Minnesota. I mean, that sounded like an argument of a dog chasing its tail. I'm not sure what the point was. You're cutting the amount of housing to 95% of the people in Minnesota, in greater Minnesota, to serve 5%?
Chair Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, obviously the current program isn't working, because if it was working, we wouldn't be having to address the issues of workforce housing in greater Minnesota.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
Actually, I think it is working in greater Minnesota. It would be working much better if you had put more than the amount that was in it last year in, so they could build not just 650 units, but maybe 1,200 or 1,300 units. But now what you're doing is, rather than creating 650 units of housing with this $5 million cut to the challenge grant, you're going to create 300. So explain to me how that logic works, because I know you're a very logical man. I've seen you in committee. I've seen you on the floor. If you have the ability to create 650 units of housing in greater Minnesota for 95% of the people, how do you improve workforce housing by only creating 300? That logic doesn't make sense. And so please explain why you're cutting $5 million from the challenge grant to create less housing.
Chair Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Mahoney, you are correct that many affordable housing programs at the federal level, there are many federal programs to encourage affordable housing. And that's why the challenge grant program is skewed, one of the reasons why the challenge grant program is skewed towards affordable housing. There are very few opportunities at the federal level to have matching grants for workforce housing. The reason why we're reprioritizing these resources is, again, to make sure that there is a focus on workforce housing. Many of the communities we're talking about, you have jobs opening, private sector is unable to expand because of this. So by reprioritizing these dollars, we are putting more of a focus on workforce housing as opposed to affordable housing. And those are two different distinctions, two different types of classifications and income qualifying limits.
Representative Mahoney. Again, the challenge grant gets to 95% of the income earners in greater Minnesota. Not 45%, not 55%. It gets to 95% of the income earners in greater Minnesota. And you cut by more than half the amount of housing that you will be building in greater Minnesota for 95% of the people to serve 5%?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, it's not 95% of income earners. It's 95% of median income. Those are two different numbers.
Actually, Mr. Chair?
Representative Mahoney?
Representative Garofalo, you're wrong. You know, the housing people are here. They can come down. They can tell you. They serve 95% of the people in greater Minnesota, income earners in greater Minnesota. I mean, I know it's hard to admit that you're wrong. I know I've never seen you do it, but you're wrong.
Mr. Chairman,
Chair Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Mahoney, if the Challenge Grant Program was working on workforce housing right now, we would not have the workforce housing crisis we're having. That the current program, the Challenge Grant Program, is skewed towards affordable housing. That's just, I don't think you and I disagree on that fact. Now, certainly a worthy criteria, worthy priority. The committee thought there was a better focus on workforce housing. I disagree with your characterization that this is going to result in less money going into workforce housing. We have a difference of opinion on this, but for the committee, there was a greater focus on workforce housing in greater Minnesota versus affordable housing.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
One last, and then I'll let it die because I know you're wrong. You've done this before in your last bill. You put money in for a pilot program. I think it was $5 million. I might be wrong on the dollar figure because it's been a year and, you know, you get to an age and you start forgetting all the numbers that they throw at you. But I know that there's $300,000 left in that particular pilot program because people didn't want to use it or couldn't come up with proposals. So you've got a proposal, I think it was less than $5 million, I think it was like $1 million to try it out. They couldn't spend $1 million in a year, and now you're going to give them $5 million that they probably won't be able to spend in a year, and you're going to cut the amount of housing for 95% of the people in greater Minnesota.
Chair Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Mahoney, you are correct about the money being on the bottom line, and one of the reasons why is because that what's happening is when people apply for these grants, they're subject to prevailing wage, and the prevailing wage requirements are actually sometimes the costs are higher than the amount of the grant. And so that's something that I would hope on a bipartisan basis we recognize there's a problem on and we can try to jumpstart that program.
Representative Gunther to this point.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, I'm the one that started the challenge grant about 14 years ago, and Mayo used it three times to get employees for Mayo to be able to live near Rochester. Hormel tried it and very successful. Schwann's tried it, very successful. AGCO just did it. It has produced a lot of housing, and it is a good program. The only thing you got to have is you got to have an employer start it. They have to match the money. So we leverage a lot of money through the challenge grant, and I think Commissioner Sieben maybe suggested in an offhand remark, if not forcefully, that maybe we should take the money from workforce housing out of deed and put it in the Minnesota Housing Finance for the challenge grant. And I think that wouldn't be a bad move, and I will have an amendment to do that on the floor.
Representative Wagenius, then Hillstrom.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. There was some conversation about the film board and the, since it's a fairly small amount, given the kinds of dollars we deal with, that it wouldn't make any difference. And I don't want the committee to be left with that impression. When we had testimony on the elimination of that money, we had real people, not lobbyists, but real people, person after person after person, explaining how it had helped them, their business, their expansion, and most importantly, they're being able to stay in Minnesota. So perhaps if there were more money, it would be helpful. But this money, the way it is extraordinarily helpful to all the people who came. Generally in our committees, we hear from lobbyists. But these were real people who were using the money, who were using the Snowbank program. I think it's a fundamental error not to listen to the people.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I want to draw your attention to Article 11, the telephone regulations section is what it's referred to. I'm very concerned about the voice and internet provisions. Back in 2015, the PUC voted unanimously that voice over internet services fell under the state's authority and the ability to protect consumers. And this undoes this. This actually undoes 100 years of telephone regulation in Minnesota. So if you're in greater Minnesota and you think that your residents deserve to have a landline so that they can have access to medical needs, for example, you can't put a heart rate monitor for a, and I can't think of what it's called right now, a pacemaker. You can't do that like through a cell phone. You actually have to have a landline to communicate with your doctor from far away. This will undo those consumer protections. So if you're a farmer and you're far away from the landline there is no guarantee that they have to provide you that service if we go to this method. AARP is opposed to this. Legal Aid is opposed to it. The Department of Commerce has come out in opposition to this. Previously, the Attorney General's Office came out in opposition to this. Members, this is absolutely going the wrong direction if you care about consumer protection at all. This undoes 100 years of telephone regulation, and that's a reason to vote against this bill.
Any other discussion or questions? Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you. One last energy question for the energy chair. Section 18 relating to the Clean Power Plan. If let's say either this case, the original Clean Power Plan is upheld, or even if it's not, do you believe, Representative Garofalo, that there's utility to for the state to do some planning to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, whether it comes from you know, the EPA or our own agencies. Is there utility to doing this? Is there utility to figuring out a plan to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions as a state, you know, over time?
Chair Garofalo.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hornstein, on that matter, the executive branch has the authority to do that. The question is whether they can implement. The primary concern of the committee was the implementation of the cap and trade system. So if it's reducing greenhouse gas emissions or carbon dioxide, they can work on ideas, work on plans. Certainly they need legislative approval to enact a lot of those things, but they certainly have the ability to work on ideas and share concerns. The problem with the Clean Power Plan right now is that, first of all, the U.S. Supreme Court has stayed that decision. It's an unprecedented action by the U.S. Supreme Court to stay it until judicial action is completed by the court. In terms of what's going to happen going forward, really the presidential election is going to decide it. If we have a Democrat president, I suspect that it'll be enforced, and a fifth justice to the Supreme Court will validate that the Clean Power Plan is not unconstitutional. If we have a Republican president, the opposite will be true. But the important thing for this committee, the one that people should be concerned about, is not the issue of power plant emissions or carbon dioxide. It's this, is that under a cap and trade system, you have what are called carbon allowances. And without boring the committee on details, what this is an instrument of value. This is a tradable commodity that allows people to, allows industries to emit carbon dioxide emissions. And this instrument of value, think of it as a pallet of money, Representative Hornstein, just stacks and stacks of money. And maybe those carbon allowances will be very valuable. Maybe they won't be. We don't know. But right now, the executive branch has taken the approach that they can take these carbon allowances and they can give them to whoever they want within the federal confines of the EPA rules. I think that's very dangerous. I don't think we want the executive branch doing that. Again, these are instruments of value that could be tens of millions of dollars in value that are just going to be unilaterally decided by the executive branch. And if the legislature doesn't step in and address this, you're not just giving the authority to Mark Dayton's administration to do this. You could give this authority to Governor Garofalo. Right? I mean, now that's...
Mr. Chair, I think there's going to be some speculation now. There'll be a lot of political punditry now. He said it first here in your committee.
I've already offered to write him a check.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman...
Chair Garofalo?
Yes. It's good to know the non-humans in the crowd found it funny. So, yeah. Mr. Chairman and Representative Hornstein, but when it comes to developing plans to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, there's nothing in this section that does it. It's with regards to specifically the Clean Power Plan, and I'm very concerned specifically that the executive branch is going to be allocating these carbon allowances on their own. I think, candidly, behind the scenes, if I were them, I would not want this authority. Unavoidably, you're going to make a lot of people unhappy. When it comes to giving away an instrument of value that's worth this much, they'd be much better off having legislative approval for that item.
Mr. Representative? Well, on cap and trade, we may have some common ground. I think a fee and dividend system is much better, and we could get some of this money back into the taxpayers' hands and reduce carbon emissions at the same time. But I guess my question was maybe a little bit more philosophical, Representative Garofalo. I mean, you know, regardless of this Section 18, I mean, is it in our interest as a state, or our agencies that regulate this, whether it's Department of Commerce, PCA, et cetera, to be moving towards clean power, clean energy, using, the tools at our disposal to get there? I mean, do you find that to be something that we should be pursuing?
Chair Garofalo.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hornstein, certainly there is value, but I think there is greater value in focusing on other areas. For example, in the area of environmental justice, I think we're far better off focusing on the benzene emissions in heavily urban areas as a result of excessive automobile travel. And promoting and incentivizing alternative fuel vehicles is going to provide us a far better bang for the buck and provide more tangible health benefits to disaffected communities. That's why last year the House of Representatives, majority party, passed incentive bills to do that exactly that. But is there value in it? Yes. But do I think it's the best return? No, I think there's a better way to do it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair and Representative Garofalo, you know, this is the Ways and Means Committee, and we should just talk about money. And so I'm going to try and keep my remarks to money. But there are a few things I'll swerve from. You, in this particular bill, you have gutted a very successful program, two very successful programs, actually I guess three with the challenge grant, but we'll disagree because you're wrong. The Job Creation Fund, Minnesota Investment Fund, together created something like 5,500 jobs. And we can quibble about where they were created, but statistically 50-50 statewide, give or take 3 or 4%. And a couple $1 billion worth of investment, capital investment by companies. And when you do this, when you take all this money out of these job creation and MIF funds, you hurt the state. You hurt the state as a whole. You hurt the metro area. You hurt greater Minnesota. Because the job creations that were done in greater Minnesota were approximately 2,000 to 3,000 jobs, give or take a couple hundred jobs here or there. And you did it primarily, you took a big chunk of the money to do a bit more in broadband, about $9 million more in broadband, but you also did it to supplement what should really be in the bonding bill, which is the Lewis and Clark. I agree that Lewis and Clark probably has to be done. I've heard all the arguments last year. I saw some veins stick out of somebody's neck last year and don't want to go down that road again, although I probably could. But that's a bonding project, and you're paying for it with cash. You know, I didn't think you looked like Senator Bach in the Senate building, but I'm starting to think that you might have some a kissing cousin somewhere in there with that particular one.
Mr. Chairman,
Chair Garofalo, like, to that point.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, I don't think we can bond for Lewis and Clark. I think we have to pay cash for it.
Well,
Representative Mahoney.
There, Mr. Chair, that may be the case, but to take 2,000 jobs from the rest of greater Minnesota to fund one particular piece, there should be a different way, especially when there's at least $500 million laying out there in a surplus. There's a better way to do that than to harm every one of these members' legislative districts, without question. And then, and we've already spoken to the challenge grant, so I won't go over that again. But in your bill, you also take money out of the Workforce Development Fund. You know, it's been done before. But members, just so you understand, because the commissioner, in a letter and in testimony, said that, but and the basically the lobbyist and the director for the Workforce Development Dislocated Workers came to the table. One of the few paid lobbyists and executive directors that actually came and challenged your bill and said it was a wrong thing to do. Because at the end of the year, the end of the day, all that money falls back to help workers that are laid off. And because of that money that you're taking out of it, $4 million out of the Workforce Development Fund, 1,600 workers in this state will not get services. So 1,600 people, 1,600 working men and women and their families, maybe they get a job. Maybe it takes them 3 more months to get a job. Maybe they don't get a job at all. Maybe they don't get the training. But those 1,600 families are going to be harmed by this bill just flat out. That's on top of the 6,000 jobs that won't be created, the $2 or $3 billion worth of investment created or retained. The $2 billion worth of investment. The 300 to 400 housing units that will be built in greater Minnesota. Your bill is a failure, but I'm going to quote an old friend of mine And I'm going to call your jobs bill the jobless jobs bill. And I don't understand why, well, I've seen the bills come through here, Mr. Chair, so I do understand what's going on. The finances of this bill is you're robbing Peter, and I don't know who you're paying. So I'll be voting no on your bill, and I would ask for a roll call on this bill, Mr. Chair.
Okay, roll call requested. Chair Garofalo, closing comments?
Mr. Chairman, I would ask for member support on this bill. Thank you.
All right. Okay. Then, members, before we get to a roll call on this bill, what I'm going to do is move that House File 3888 as amended, which is the Omnibus Agriculture Bill, be amended on to House File 3931 and the title amended. Any discussion to that motion? This, members, is a motion so that we can include the agriculture bill, and after this motion has been acted on, I'll do the same with the environment bill, and then, as we had previously discussed and announced, be adding all of these three bills together underneath House File 3931 for the omnibus bill that we'll be voting on this evening.
Well, Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Mahoney.
I'm not sure on the parliamentary procedure, but if I ask for a roll call on a particular bill, do you have the ability, and do the rules cover the fact that I'd prefer to have a roll call on this particular bill? I don't care what you do after that, but I want this on the record that you're going to vote for, that people are going to vote to pass this bill out.
We are going to vote on this particular bill.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, no, Representative Mahoney, this you will absolutely get a roll call on House File 3931.
Oh.
But the other bills will be amended onto it.
But Mr. Chair, I thought if someone called for a roll call, that is a higher order than a motion to amend.
I will check with Mr. Stone here, and I'll look at the rules, but while I'm doing that, I don't think that's the case. Representative Carlson. Yeah,
Mr. Chairman, I think an important part of this discussion, and you can check on the rule, but the other day I asked you about the procedure, and you indicated that we would have an opportunity to vote on each bill individually. And you said we would have, and I think that's what Representative Mahoney is requesting, is for an individual vote on the 3931 before it is amended, because that does change the dynamics once you put the other bills in terms of being able to focus, as I think Representative Mahoney wants to do, on this particular bill. So I would request that you follow through what you indicated the other day, that we would have that opportunity to vote on each bill individually.
Representative Carlson, I don't know that I ever made that commitment. I'm not sure that I could have made that commitment, knowing that all along we had announced that these three bills were going to be merged together. That's what I've announced some time ago. I announced it again yesterday. Certainly people have the opportunity to vote on each individual bill when it is being proposed to be amended on the House File 3931, and then they have an opportunity to vote on House File 3931 as amended. But I don't know that I made that commitment, Representative Carlson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy asked you a question the other day about the procedure, and after you responded to her, I followed that up, and we even talked about the procedures that I had used when I was in the chair that you now have, and I was certainly left with the impression, if nothing else, that we would be voting on each of these bills individually and then folding them in. Now, the one difference between yesterday with the education bills was that you brought forward a separate bill, but we did vote on each education bill individually, and then we had that opportunity with a motion, if I recall correctly, that you followed up after we voted on them, folding them into the third bill that you're the chief author of.
Well,
I don't I quite frankly am a little bit in wonderment here why there would be any resistance to voting on this bill as a separate bill before it's before a motion to fold the other bills in would take place. We're getting to vote individually in the other two bills.
Well, Representative Carlson, I guess I don't recall my commitment being that, although there may be a way to accomplish that. I think that we had all along talked about how we were going to be merging these bills together, so there shouldn't have been any sort of a surprise to that. Okay. But let me consult with Mr. Stone a second here, just a second.
And Len.
Can we put them together?
Okay, Representative Carlson, I think I've got a way to accomplish what you're requesting, and that is we will vote on this bill. We will take a roll call vote on it so that you can get that, and then I will move to reconsider the vote, and then we will, presuming everyone is willing to go along with the chair, we'll bring the bill back before us, and then we'll have an opportunity to amend the other bills on. Would that be satisfactory? I'm just trying to reach out.
Actually, he's got it right.
Mr. Chair.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you. And I haven't been here as long as either you, Representative Mahoney, or Representative Carlson, but I believe if we follow your procedure, put the three bills together, then if Representative Mahoney was moved to delete one of the articles orally, it could be Representative Garofalo's bill, and that would have the effect of getting a roll call vote on Representative Garofalo's bill, and you wouldn't have to do a reconsideration.
No.
Well, we could do it that way, too.
Whatever.
Would that be satisfactory, Representative Mahoney? I'm just trying to reach out to you guys and accomplish what you're trying to do.
I think you had a great plan. Just go right ahead, because you've got Mr. Stone understanding exactly seems how he was the one who suggested it to you.
Well, I'm always willing to take suggestions. All right. Well, Representative Carlson.
Is that the procedure you're going to follow then, the recent suggestion? Because I'm just trying to figure out how that would work, because you would have attached the other two bills to 3931.
No, I'm Representative Carlson. My proposal is that we vote on it. Is that we vote on House File 3931 now, and after Representative Mahoney has the roll call vote he desires, we then vote to reconsider the bill, assuming that it will have passed, or failed for that matter. And I'll reconsider it either way. And then I guess would be my intention to amend the other two bills onto it.
Mr. Chairman, I'm more comfortable with that than, although on this particular issue, Representative Mahoney is the spokesperson, but I'm more comfortable with your suggestion than the other suggestion that was just made, because I think that would complicate what's left behind.
All right. Then any other discussion to House File 3931? Seeing none, all in favor of House File
3931? No, it's
the roll call. Excuse me. Okay. The clerk will call the roll on House File 3931 as amended, being referred to the General Register.
Knobloch?
Yes.
Albright?
Yes.
Anderson?
Yes.
Carlson?
No.
Cornish?
Yes.
Davids?
Yes.
Dean?
Yes.
Detmer?
Yes.
Drazkowski?
Yes.
Garofalo?
Yes.
Gunther?
Yes.
Eckbarth?
Yes.
Hamilton?
Yes.
Hillstrom?
No.
Hornstein?
No.
Kahn?
No.
Liebling?
No.
Loon?
Yes.
Mahoney?
No.
McNamara?
Yes.
Murphy? Murphy?
No.
Nornes?
Yes.
Pulowski?
No.
Poppy?
No.
Perkelson?
Yes.
Bertal?
Yes.
Wagenius?
No.
Thank you.
There being 16 ayes and 10 nays, House File 3931, as amended, is referred to the General Register. Members, I'll move that House File 3931 be reconsidered. All in favor of reconsidering the vote by which House File 3931 was referred to the General Register, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No. Motion prevails. House File 3931 is reconsidered. All right, members. Now I'll move that House File 3888, as amended, be amended on to House File 3931, and the title be amended accordingly. Any discussion to that motion? All right, all in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 3888, as amended, is amended on to House File 3931, as amended, and the title adjusted accordingly. Members, I'd like to now move that House File 3890, as amended, be amended on to House File 3931, as amended, and the title amended accordingly. Any discussion?
Maybe, Mr. Chairman, it would be wise to mention to people in the audience in case they don't know which bill.
All right, yeah, this is the environment bill that we had discussion on this afternoon. And as we previously discussed, we were going to merge these three bills, the Jobs and Energy Bill, the Agriculture Bill, and the Environment Bill together, leaving the committee. So we just did vote on the Agriculture Bill, and now this is the Environment and Natural Resources Bill. Thank you, Representative Carlson. Discussion on that motion? All in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
No. Motion prevails. House File 3890, as amended, is amended onto House File 3931, as amended, and the title adjusted accordingly. Okay, members, now we have House File 3931 as amended before us. Any discussion? This now includes the Jobs and Energy Bill, the Agriculture Bill, and the Omnibus Environment Bill. Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, would like to request roll call.
Roll call is requested. Okay, the clerk will take the roll on House File 3931.
Mr. Chairman, I guess we have a divided opinion over here about a roll call, so I withdraw my request for a roll call.
Representative Carlson withdraws his request for a roll call. Okay, all in favor of House File 3931 as amended, being referred to the General Register, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. House File 3931, as amended, is referred to the General Register. Thank you, Chair Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Members, I'm looking at having our time tomorrow that we meet to take up the final three bills be 1:30. So we'll send out an amended time. That'll give people a little time for lunch. Republicans will be looking at caucusing at noon. I'll give you in 4:54 to go over the three bills we'll be taking up tomorrow: state government finance, health and human services, and public safety. With that, members, we are adjourned.